Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This is a special edition of the Charlie Brennan Show with Hancock and Kelly. Sponsored by Drs. Birdie, Mahatra, Brusati, and Royer of Ophthalmology Associates. Now, John Hancock and Michael Kelly, presented by St. Louis University Law School on KMOX.
Hey, good Friday morning, St. Louis. It's Hancock and Kelly coming to you from our last day in Jupiter, Florida. Actually, John, the prettiest weather day of the week.
Yeah, it's a gorgeous day out here. The Cardinals are going to be down in...
Up in Port St. Lucie.
Port St. Lucie playing the Mets later today. You can hear that game on the stream at MLB.com or Cardinals.com. Our own Tom Ackerman and Kyle McClellan will be bringing you the action. Big news out of the ballpark here at Jupiter yesterday at Roger Dean Stadium. The Cardinals have reached an agreement, a five-year extension with first baseman Paul Goldschmidt, and man, that didn't take long.
No, it didn't take long, and they had a good day on the field yesterday against the Yankees. I guess it was right after the game this rumor broke and was all over MLB.com and our local press covering it here on KMOX. Of course, Tom Ackerman reporting about it. Great news. I mean, it would have been a hard season to go through with Paul Goldschmidt, like we had to go through with Mark McGwire and Matt Holliday, hoping that they were going to stick around. And here's a guy who said, hey, like what I've seen, want to stay where I'm at, going to spend the next 5 years in St. Louis. That's a good thing, John. Although, I'm a little bit concerned, having watched him a couple of games, he seems a little slow out there.
Oh, buddy, he's going to be fine. This is a legitimate Hall of Fame contender early in his career. He's 31 years old. He's put up very consistent numbers for a long time. I mean, you go back to 2013, 36 homers, 125 RBIs. He's hit 36, 33, 24, 36, 33 home runs in a season. That's very consistent. Three times over 100 RBIs. He's a career 297 hitter, is Paul Goldschmidt. He's a potent bat in the middle of that lineup, and he's going to be there through the year 2024 at least. And the kind of a player the Cardinals haven't had in this lineup since Albert Pujols left. And he's going to just be a rock steady, stable influence, potent stick in the middle of the order. Very good news for the Cardinals.
And speaking of Albert Pujols, probably our first real solid first baseman that we've had. We've had first base by committee over the last several years. And of course, we'd have folks that came in and played a year for us there. But to know that first base is covered, third base is covered, those are important corners to have. And when you've got the bats of Carpenter and now Paul Goldschmidt, you got to hope that those two guys will be hitting on all cylinders. This team can go a long way because now we have a rotation, John, as well established, and we've got five good, solid starters, all right-handers, though.
And they've looked good this spring, all five of them. Even Adam Wainwright, who had the injury-plagued year last year, he's looked very sharp in spring training. Dakota Hudson, named as the fifth starter on this rotation, he's looked very good throughout the spring. And, you know, the contract for Goldschmidt, 5 years, $130 million, works out to about $26 million a year. It's a lot of money, but it's not as rich as you might have thought. And you wonder if maybe the Cardinals have the space now, if they choose to sign Marcell Ozuna. This is his walk year, the Cardinal left fielder. And if he has the kind of season in 2019 like he had with the Marlins in 2017, where he was an MVP candidate, won the Gold Glove as a left fielder. If he has that kind of year this year and the Cardinals can sign him, now all of a sudden you've got a very potent offense for the foreseeable future. It wasn't too many years ago when the Cardinals brought Jason Hayward in for a season, and he opted his free agent year not to sign with the Cardinals. He signed with the miserable Chicago Cubs instead, and said at the time that he didn't see the future in St. Louis with the young talent like he saw with the Cubs, and he wanted to go to Chicago and win a World Series, which he did. You can't say that about this ball club now. You've got the young talent You know, don't forget about Paul DeJong at shortstop. Don't forget about Harrison Bader, a very talented center fielder. This team is good up the middle. Yadi Molina backstopping again this year, the face of the franchise. There is so much to like about this team and so much excitement over this team. And having the contract situation settled with Goldschmidt, it's going to make that opening day very, very sweet on April the 4th.
A little bit of surprise seeing Dexter Fowler step to the bat yesterday. First pitch he sees, John, he smacks it to right field.
Over the fence,
comes back up. Second time at bat, hits one again. You know, if Dexter Fowler is what we all know he is capable of doing, and so you've got that great arm in the outfield, you've got him being able to cover right field, and then producing and providing at the plate, you couple that with Matt Carpenter, along with Paul Goldschmidt, Yadier Molina, who's just solid, man. The guy just makes contact, gives you a good at bat every time he's up the bat. Harrison Bader, of course, this young upstart that we have that's won the center field job. This could be a really fun team to win, to watch and hopefully win, but hopefully provide us with some bats, which is what this team's lacked.
Well, check out this batting order. This is what it looks like the Cardinals are going to go into the season with. Matt Carpenter leading off. He hit 36 home runs last year. Dexter Fowler on a bounce-back year and looking very much like it will be a bounce-back year in the two-hole. Paul Goldschmidt batting third. Then you got Marcell Ozuna, who went deep yesterday, got three hits yesterday in the cleanup spot. Paul DeJong, a young fellow who hit 25 home runs his rookie season. He's got some pop, batting fifth. And then you've got Yadier Molina, Colton Wong, Harrison Bader, who stole three bases the other day. That is a potent lineup. And there's no easy outs in that thing, 1-8. And you couple that with a very encouraging pitching staff and the bullpen that looks to be solid. I think the Cardinals win the NL Central this year. I really do.
Well, that's a bold statement. Boy, we're in the final stretch here for the Cardinals. They've shut down the starters now. We'll prepare to make the pilgrimage north. It's my understanding when we play in Memphis that Adam Wainwright and Michael Wacha will pitch against each other there in Memphis, likely Wacha pitching for Memphis and Wainwright pitching for the Cardinals. That'll be interesting to see.
It will be interesting to see, and we're all set then to start the season in 6 short days in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and it will be the right-hander Miles Michaelis taking the mound for the Cardinals. They play a couple games there in Milwaukee, I think 4 in Milwaukee, and then they play a couple games, and then they come home, and the home opener looks like will be started by Jack Flaherty, the rookie phenom from last year. He's been extremely sharp this spring, and those games against Milwaukee are going to be very important. One last thing about Paul Goldschmidt. If you look at his numbers, of course, he played in the National League West with the Arizona Diamondbacks for the last 6 seasons. If you look at his numbers and what he has done against the NL Central clubs, talking about the Cubs and the Brewers and the Reds and the Pirates, they are historically good numbers. And we're going to need that bat in those ballparks. Miller Park's a great park to hit home runs in. Milwaukee, the Great America Ballpark down in Cincinnati, is a bandbox. It gives up a lot of home runs. Of course, Wrigley Field, when that wind's blowing out, you could see some really, really big monster numbers from Goldschmidt and the rest of these ball players, and if they get that early in the season, look out, baby, because here come the Redbirds.
And just about 2 weeks until the Cardinals come back to St. Louis for what is arguably the best day to be a St. Louisan. Opening day, we get to see those Clydesdales. Everybody comes in on the convertibles, the Hall of Famers in their red jackets, Camo X with kegs and eggs. It is an unofficial holiday in St. Louis that we're all looking forward
Can't
to.
Wait.
We'll all be there for opening day. Let's get this season started.
Yes. We're going to turn our attention when we come back. An interesting cultural phenomenon that's going on in this country right now is the polarization between spouses over politics, over Donald Trump. Many of us have experienced it at Thanksgiving dinners and over the holidays where there may be some disagreements within the family. Well, there's one very high-profile family that's going through it right now. I'm talking about senior advisor to the president, Kellyanne Conway, and her husband, the attorney, George Conway. They have very differing views about Donald Trump, and it's starting to spill out into the public. I wonder if it might be affecting some of you as well. We'll talk about that next on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
This is a special edition of the Charlie Brennan Show with Hancock and Kelly, sponsored by Drs. Birdie, Mahatra, Brusati, and Royer of Ophthalmology Associates. Now, once again, John Hancock and Michael Kelly, presented by St. Louis University Law School on KMOX.
And we are coming to you today from Jupiter, Florida, our last day here, and then we'll be coming back to St. Louis. The Cardinals just now leaving in their bus to go north to Port St. Lucie to take on the Mets. And John, you know, you and I, we rarely agree on anything.
Excellent point.
But we found a way to establish a friendship and be able to get along with each other.
Yeah.
Despite you being completely flawed with nearly every belief you have.
I'm right on the money.
And but so many people are dealing with family members, spouses, where you have conflicting political views in this really hot environment that we're in. And probably no more prominent two people than Kellyanne Conway and her husband, George Conway, who Kellyanne Conway, of course, an advisor to the president, George Conway, a lawyer. The president injected himself into their relationship this week after George Conway went out and questioned the mental stability of the president. I think so many of us have done that. And he called him a complete loser and said that he was a terrible husband. And then Kellyanne Conway, after months of silence while her husband had been attacking the president, finally weighed in.
Yeah, it was something else. You know, it was just a few days ago, George Conway, who's been increasing his Twitter attacks on Donald Trump, he basically tweeted out a diagnosis of a narcissistic personality disorder, claiming that that's what the president suffered from. The president responded in a tweet. He called George Conway a total loser and the husband from hell, he said. And Kellyanne, who really hasn't said much publicly about her husband, she asserted this week that Donald Trump was well within his rights to respond when somebody, a non-medical somebody, accuses the president of having a mental disorder. And she basically taking her husband to task. And, you know, this doesn't seem to me to be a very healthy relationship. Now, there's been high profile. I'm thinking of James Carville and Mary Madeline, for example.
Hancock and Kelly.
we're not married, buddy. We don't sleep in the same bed.
Thank God.
Yes, sir. But, you know, this situation with the Conways is, I think, potentially serious. And, you know, on a human level, there are children involved here. And I can't think of two more diametrically opposed viewpoints about something so fundamental. Kellyanne Conway is a senior advisor to the President of the United States. She works in the West Wing of the White House. And her husband is out there just trashing the president publicly on Twitter and saying vile things about Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, of course, is unable to. I mean, he's going to respond when he gets attacked like that. And he's going after Conway and he's kind of putting Kellyanne in the middle. She seems to be siding with the president. That's her employer. This is a tough deal.
And it occurs to us that happens in so many relationships. Maybe you're in a relationship or you have family members you disagree with. I can tell you from a personal note, folks who are on my side of the aisle come up to me, they just can't fathom why you and I get along. I'm sure you get the same kind of conversation. And it really speaks to how messed up the situation is. Maybe you're in one of those relationships. We'd like to hear from you at 314-436-7900, 1-800-925-1120. Are you in a relationship where politics is something that you all disagree on vehemently? How do you navigate it? What kind of rules have you established amongst yourselves to be able to handle your relationship at a time where politics seems to be dominating every aspect of our lives?
And you know, if you want to give your nickel's worth of psychological advice here for the Conways, is this a marriage that can be salvageable beyond the Trump era, or are they in the process of creating such a chasm that the end of that relationship is inevitable? And And that would be sad. I hate to see when relationships break up.
Do you have any family members that, and I'm probably not immediate family members, but just in general, immediate or extended family members, where you all disagree politically?
Not much. You know, we have varying degrees of everybody in my family, I would categorize as a Donald Trump supporter of one stripe or another. Some are more enthusiastic about embracing Donald Trump than others, but everybody is pretty solid behind supporting the president.
So that's not the case with me. I have a big family, and I think most of my immediate family members are not fans of the president, but we have extended family that you know, likes the president. We have found, and I've found that really, I don't know if this has always been the case, but when we get together for Thanksgiving or Easter, we just don't discuss politics, even though the majority of us may agree on a point. It just is not something that, that needs to be injected into the family gathering.
Well, here's the trick that I have done, not a trick. Here's the approach that I have developed over the years, you know, because I used to be a candidate years ago. So I was a politician running for office. And so you're always going to confront people that disagree with you about things. And here's a couple of little pointers, Michael, for the people listening at home. If you find yourself in a political disagreement with a family member, perhaps a spouse, the first thing I try to do is identify a point at which you can concur. There's usually something that somebody of a different point of view has, an attitude they have, a belief they have, a position they have that you can embrace and endorse and support. And if you can kind of get to that point where, you know, I agree with you that blah, 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 blah. However, I disagree. And if you can start off from that point, it kind of softens the rest of the conversation rather than just going after somebody and then calling them names and disparaging their character. And
well, and that's unfortunately where it winds up going.
Right.
And by the way, it's being led by those of us at the top. I mean, the president is the first one to go out there and call people names. It's not the most helpful thing. We've seen then the Democratic leaders have followed suit, or even the McCain family. Let's go to the phone lines. A couple of you wanting to get in on this. Margie, you're going to be first on KMOX.
Good morning. Mr. Kelly, it's Insane Margie. How are you today?
Hello, Margie.
How are you guys doing? Are you keeping okay? Everything all
right? We're good. I got a little pink around the temple here. It's sunshine.
Okay. Ah, well, good for you. My husband and I met the Saturday after the 92 election, and we had voted differently. The things you're not supposed to talk about in polite conversation. Religion and politics. We talked about it all night long. It was stimulating. It was engaging. And I was fascinated to hear somebody else's viewpoints. Fell in love, got married, and we were married for a long time before eventually I chose to vote the same way that he voted. So yes, it can work. However, I do have a family member who is not really my friend anymore. And I've had a couple friends that chose not to be my friends anymore after the last election, which made me really sad. And it says to me more about them than it does about me in the long run. But so, yes, relationships can work when you vote differently.
All right. Well, that's a great call. And that's a great perspective. And yeah, it is sad to lose relationships over political differences. I just don't think it's worth it. You know, human relationships are a wonderful thing. And it's a great gift that we have. Let's go to Jamie. Jamie, you're on KMOX.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Great.
Good.
Oh, good. I have a theory about Kellyanne Conway and her husband. You guys tell me what you think of this. I think that Kellyanne is in conflict with everything that Trump is doing, and she's having her husband, they're in cahoots, having her husband criticize him so much that way she can actually just say, okay, I step down, instead of getting fired or quitting and going out in grace.
Hmm. Huh.
I don't know that I buy into that. I mean, it's a good theory, but I don't know that I buy into it. Kellyanne Conway is somebody who's committed her entire life to working for conservative candidates. I think she truly believes and supports the president. I think she probably has respect for the fact that her husband has a differing point of view. But look, when you have the president of the United States weighing in on your relationship, it takes it to a whole new level.
You know, and here's my kind of perception of being in the political consulting world. You know, the number of people who manage successful presidential campaigns is a very small number of people. So if you look at our profession, Michael, neither one of us have ever done that. Likely neither one of us ever will. It's a very small universe of people. And now Kellyanne Conway, the former Kellyanne Fitzpatrick, she was not going into the 2016 election. She was not somebody that you would have thought would ever manage a presidential campaign. I mean, if you know the industry, you know the business. She was a pollster, you know, and some folks really liked her polling and other people weren't so crazy. But I'm talking about Republicans. And here she ends up managing a presidential campaign, putting her in a very small universe of people on the planet. And it was a successful one. So I don't, I have to believe that she is wholly committed to Donald Trump and wholly committed to supporting him. She certainly is a willing mouthpiece to defend and support him on every matter. And so I would be hard pressed to believe that she's in cahoots with her husband because secretly she really disagrees with Donald Trump.
Well, thank you for those calls. That was a good discussion. We didn't get into any mudslinging and handled it in a very nice way. Hey, John.
Yeah, buddy.
I think we can both agree we are in an incredible job environment throughout the country. And in Missouri in particular, technology is a blossoming industry in Missouri. And we're going to talk to some folks who say that this is a train that's going and going and going.
Yeah, the Missouri Chamber of Commerce has just conducted a workforce study, and they've got some interesting findings. We're going to be joined by the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, Dan Meehan, and economist Ted Abernathy, who conducted this study. They've got some, I think you're going to find, very encouraging news about what's just around the corner in St. Louis and in Missouri. That's next right here on the Voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
Hey, and welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show, coming to you from Jupiter, Florida. We are joined on the GL International Realty Guest Line by Dan Meehan. He is the president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, and Ted Abernathy, an author of a report related to technology. Gentlemen, welcome to KMOX.
Good morning, Michael.
Thank you.
Daniel, I think we can agree that this job market across the country in Missouri is on fire. And you are concluding a study that shows that even if the market goes on a downturn, technology jobs in Missouri are on the upswing.
That's correct. While you and John Hancock are lollygagging around Florida, we're releasing a report on jobs creation in the technology sector. We just had a conference here in St. Louis with about 150 people attending, talking about the different dynamics that we see in Missouri and across the nation. And a lot of times, Mike, when we're looking at the way Missouri performs, unfortunately, sometimes we're lagging behind. That's why we launched into what we call Missouri 2030, when we were 42nd in job creation and 43rd in state GDP growth 4 years ago. But we've got a great story to tell in the tech sector. We're a top 10 state for technology opportunities. We're number one in dynamism, as they call it, in technology, which is more tech companies are starting in Missouri. The measure of tech companies that start versus those that get out of the market, we're number one in the nation in that. So we've got a great story to tell. We're trying to amplify that so we can capitalize on that strength that we have in Missouri and in St. Louis in particular.
And Ted Abernathy, you were the author and you provided this report. How did Missouri stack up against our neighboring states or, and for that matter, the rest of the country?
Really well. In fact, Missouri in your neighborhood, some of the other states around you are actually losing tech jobs. It's a misnomer that everybody's growing tech jobs. In fact, tech places are there's winners and losers. Missouri is one of those winners, and as we projected in the next 5 years, a top 10 state in the country for the attraction of tech jobs. The other great news is it's broad-based. There's IT jobs and hardware and software. There's life science jobs. There's environmental tech jobs. So it's a real broad base. That leads us to believe that it's going to continue for some time to come.
And the good thing about these jobs, Dan Meehan, is that these jobs start off at a high level. They've got a high ability to earn. They escalate. These are good-paying jobs.
They're good-paying jobs, John, and they're transferable in a lot of ways. So a lot of the STEM-oriented jobs and STEM training apply to this. And again, St. Louis has a great story to tell in that regard. If you look at some tech mammoths with Boeing or Worldwide Technology, or just the name two, and Bayer, the name three, then you have their supplier base that relies heavily on technology. So the demand is there. And like you're saying, it's very good paying jobs and a very career-oriented way to go.
You know, a lot of us think of tech jobs as coastal jobs. You got Silicon Valley out in California. You think about all the tech jobs that are on the east and west coast of this country. Ted Abernathy, why would companies that are out there sitting on the ocean, why would they find it alluring to come and do business in a place like Missouri?
Well, the two things that drive decisions for companies typically are, where can I find the talent and what's the cost structure of doing business? Can I make a profit? So far, what we're seeing is the tech talent has been enough to drive growth in the Missouri marketplace and the St. Louis marketplace. It's always a challenge. As you said early on, it's a hot market. Finding talent is sort of the key for every company. But the cost structure in the Midwest is a little less. And it's not just the cost structure in terms of business taxes or the business climate. It's also the cost structure for living for their employees. So if you've got to pay an employee where a small house costs $1 million in San Francisco, all of a sudden your cost structure for doing business in the Midwest and in Missouri looks a lot better. So those are two really good things. But the other is, as Dan already said, you have strong tech companies already here, and those companies are attracting people here with the type of skills they need. So overall, a whole set of real strong attributes.
And if I could add one thing, John, Governor Parson spent a considerable amount of time with us yesterday at the conference. He addressed the group, and then we had a session with our key people in technology talking about how to brand Missouri, how to take this nationwide, global, to talk about our success story. And I think we're going to come out with some pretty solid ideas on how to do that and keep the drumbeat going into the future.
You know, gentlemen, when we talk about science, technology, engineering, and math, there's all these studies and reports that show that females just aren't getting into those industries like they should, and the opportunities are typically going to males. It's interesting to see that Missouri rankings with women in the tech workforce and Missouri Tech strength shows some really opportunity for employment and diversity. Ted?
It's you're a top 10 state. In fact, you're number 6 in the country in the percentage of females occupying tech jobs. You're also in the top 10 for diversity for tech jobs. So the great news for the state is the technology opportunities are spread across the whole state. We see a lot of places, but they're also spread across the whole population. So we're not there yet. It's a little more than a third of tech jobs are occupied by women, but that puts you number 6 in the country, and the numbers look like they're getting stronger here. So as more technology opportunities are permeating through your high schools and your community colleges and your institutions, I think you're going to see those numbers begin to change, and you're one of the leaders in the country now.
Dan Meehan, how important in this study did you find the access to workers? And I'm thinking about, you know, what Launch Code has been doing in the Cortex development and training people in coding. I'm thinking about the institutions of higher education that we have here, whether it be Washington University, St. Louis University, UMSL. How important are those kinds of facilities in recruiting and maintaining these tech jobs in an economy like St. Louis's?
Mission critical. We've got a workforce issue that's not different than the rest of the country. There's jobs out there, and there aren't people to fill them. I think it's more acute the higher tech you get. So what the university system is doing, and not just the university system, John, but the community colleges, and we just had a meeting at the Jennings School District up in North County, it starts early, and we've got to expose kids to the career opportunities that are out there by taking them out into the field and giving them an experience of learning what opportunities, what careers lie ahead, but a lot of them are going to rely on tech, on technology or STEM-based curriculum and STEM-based application.
We are visiting with Dan Meehan, the chairman and president and CEO of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, and with noted economist Ted Abernathy, who has conducted this study looking at the workforce in the tech area in the St. Louis and greater Missouri area at 2030. Ted Abernathy, take me to 2030. Let's look at this thing 11 years from now. What do you think St. Louis and Missouri is going to look like from a job development and economic activity standpoint?
So in the study, we did two things. We looked at the industry, and we've been quoting mostly industry facts so far, but we also looked at occupations. And a couple things you find is that in every industry, tech occupations are growing rapidly. And in every part of the state, I think it was all but five counties, the number of jobs with tech occupations are expected to grow. So when we look forward 10 years, we're going to see people that we're going to see a world where quantum computing and artificial intelligence and machine learning and all those things that we talk about a little now are just the norm. Just like about 10 years ago, 11 years ago, we started having a smartphone for the first time. So we're going to look forward, we're going to see new tech, and then people who are successful are going to have better math skills. They're going to have better skills that allow them to understand that everybody's not going to have to be a computer scientist, but people are going to integrate more with the technology that's there. In this area, you're going to see the companies that are great. Probably many of them will continue to be great, but there's a company out there somewhere. We saw some entrepreneurs at our recent conference that, you know, they now have 22 employees or 45 employees. They're going to have 1,000 in 10 years. And so those companies that we don't even know who they are yet are going to do things in medicine, are going to do things in education, in financial services, and the jobs that they're going to create are jobs we haven't even imagined yet. We're just going to have to keep giving our talent more and more skill sets so they can train and reskill and upskill so they'll be ready for those jobs. And they're good jobs, as Dan and you both said. These are jobs that pay well above our norms. And how we get people prepared for that, that's the real challenge nationally. What's the competitive nature of our education and training systems as we prepare for that future?
Well, no doubt, exciting times ahead. Before we let you go, Dan Meehan, Missouri is sort of unique in that we've got this agricultural mecca. We're one of the great farming states in America, clearly agriculture being a massive industry in Missouri. And if you look at what's happening in Kansas City with animal science and what they've developed, and if you look at what's happening in St. Louis with plant and life science work, you've got the University of Missouri in Columbia sort of at the nexus between those two things. There is, I would think, potential in the ag sector for these technology jobs to be uniquely suited for Missouri.
You're absolutely right, John. Ag tech is a sector that we should own as Missouri, as St. Louis and Kansas City and the region. With, like you mentioned, the research going on, the fact that the population of the world is going to double by 2050, and we will figure out how to feed them between Champaign-Urbana and Lawrence, Kansas. And it's all happening here. It's not just growing the crops, and it's processing, it's pharmaceuticals, it's how you farm. So we've got a wonderful opportunity to take that with all the great research going on at the Danforth Center, at the University of Missouri, and like you mentioned, the animal health in Kansas City, and we need to exploit that and take advantage of it.
People that want to read the Technology 2030 report can go where?
www.mochamber.com, and it's right there to view. It's a good news story for the state, and unfortunately, sometimes we are guilty of not bragging about the things we do well, and this is something we need to brag about.
A little good news from the heartland. That's Dan Meehan, the president of the Missouri Chamber of Commerce, joined by economist Ted Abernathy. The report is called Technology 2030. You could see it at mochamber.com. Thanks so much, gentlemen, for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you.
And when we return, Michael Kelly and I will turn our attention back to something truly fascinating. That's next on KMOX. Well, I got a little something here, Michael. It's the food fascists are at it again. Apparently, starting in this school year at New York schools, New York City schools, they're going to introduce something called Meatless Mondays. Mayor Bill de Blasio has introduced this new meal program. Meatless Mondays will provide students with all vegetarian breakfast and lunch offerings. It's being expanded citywide from a pilot program. Basically, Bill de Blasio is telling you you can't eat meat on Mondays in New York public schools.
What's your problem with that?
Because maybe I want to have meat on Mondays.
Yeah, but John, look, part of going to school is learning about the food table and learning about things. Eating meat every day is not healthy for you. We all know that, and if you're going to learn it, why not learn it in school? And by the way, it's one day that they're going to be able to have. Doesn't mean that they can't have
eggs.
It's the most
important day, Monday.
Couldn't have, right, but it's Meatless Monday. So maybe it would start to bring some healthy habits, which would be helpful for our diabetes that's going on in this country, our heart conditions that are going on in this country. For kids to learn that there's some alternatives to eating that red meat or that burger every day.
Yeah, or an egg for breakfast, or maybe even,
no, you heaven eat forbid, an egg. An
no,
egg
would that's be not, a, that's not no. vegetarian. Yeah, it's vegetarian.
No. Eggs, that would be complete vegan if you did away with eggs
and cheese.
That's
what I think the man's
doing. No, he's doing meatless. He's saying we're going to do away with red meat and chicken, and you're going to have...
Bacon.
And bacon, yes. Well, of all the things we should be limiting is the consumption
Monday morning,
of bacon.
Little Junior puts on his little overalls, and he goes off to school
overalls.
There in the Bronx. And little Junior is starting his week. He gets in there to the breakfast room there at the local grade school, and he wants some bacon and eggs for breakfast, Michael.
Oh.
It's Monday morning. He's starting the week. And the mayor of New York is denying him the freedom to pick and eat whatever the heck he wants to eat. It's not right for the government to come
in there and
restrict your choices.
John, you make this sound like this is some authoritarian government that's coming in. And it's teaching kids other options. It's important that we learn about health. We learn about health. We learn about sex in schools. They teach this stuff. And why not put into practice when we're telling people, hey, you need to be eating, consuming less sugar. You need to be consuming less meat, that we show them that there are other healthier opportunities once a week where you can still satiate your hunger, and it doesn't include meat. This is a very positive practice.
Let me read from the report that I just read. Meatless Mondays will provide students with all vegetarian breakfast and lunch offerings. That's what it says, Michael. It's so you can't get an egg because that's not vegetarian, and because eggs come from apparently chickens, and they're very tasty and they're very
Can
yummy
I ask
for
you
breakfast.
A question? Why do you get so outraged about stuff that's
I'll
worried about
you
people's
why.
Health, but
Camel's
you're not
nose.
Worried about the fact that we have military style guns that are so prevalent in our society?
Now you're switching the
no,
subject.
No, my point is that you get outraged about petty things.
436.
Where we're teaching people how to be healthy.
7900.
And but when it comes to real things that we see on a daily basis, you tell me to look the other way.
925-1120. I mean, here's the thing, Michael. I see a snake in the grass here. And when the government starts
can't
telling
eat a
you,
snake, that would be meat.
Oh, no, that's meat. I know. Not on Mondays, apparently.
Yeah.
When the government starts telling you and restricting what you have access to, and you know,
doesn't mean that you can't bring your own sandwich to school. You could bring your own cold cut sandwich.
Just a matter of time.
No, John,
you whipping out
it's
the bologna.
It's teaching healthy behavior.
I can see it now.
We are a fat country.
Whipping
Look,
out
no
the
further than going to these ball games or going to the mall or going everywhere. We are so overweight as a society. We have heart conditions that are killing us on a daily basis. And for us to start to learn at the youngest age, just like they're teaching these young kids at a young age to recycle, some of the most active recyclers in the world are young people who are being taught about what's happening in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
If we can teach these folks at a young age that maybe not having meat once a day can be helpful for your diet, it may help them live longer, be more prosperous, be able to be better prepared to go into this world. This is not a bad thing, John Hancock.
It's a terrible thing. Little Rodrigo ripping out his bologna sandwich on Monday afternoon. I could see the meat police coming around and suspending him from school for 5 days. Let's go to the phone, shall we, Michael?
Okie doke.
Larry, you're on Camo X. Larry? Well, we have no Larry.
Crazy Larry, not there.
Larry has left the building. He went to go grab some meat. While
no,
he still
I don't
can.
Think he is. I mean, look, this is the places that we should be teaching young people about health, about safety, about the food table, about the impacts sure. of the what they put into their body yes. causes an effect on their health.
Yeah.
We talk about the rising costs of health care, etc. It's because we're obese. It's because we're eating things that are unhealthy for us. To teach kids and show them in practice that one day a week you can see that there's healthy alternatives out there, it might start something really good.
Kelly, you're on KMOX.
As a farmer, I depend upon livestock to give diversity to my operation and for my income. And if we're going to have meatless Mondays, maybe we ought to have radio-less Fridays then.
Well, that would cut my pay by $30-$40. Hey, Larry, thank you for being a leader in feeding the world out there.
It's not going to affect the amount of meat that's sold. I mean, or is there an admission that we're selling too much meat?
It's all about choice, Michael. It's about
yeah, whether... and it's also teaching kids about positive choices sure. that they can make in their life. We talk about the spiraling control of healthcare, costs of healthcare in this country and in Missouri. It's being driven a lot by the heart, John. The science is in. Eating meat every day is not healthy for you. You need to maybe understand that there are healthier alternatives out there. For kids to go for 9 months a year and to find on one day they're going to experience other foods outside of meats to help them make more healthy decisions is a positive thing.
Well, let the young lad make that choice for him or herself. Rich, you're on KMOX.
Good morning. I think that this whole issue is like Missouri weather. Wait 15 minutes and it's going to change. They keep telling us different things about our health and what we should ingest and what we shouldn't ingest, and they keep changing it. How do you keep a scorecard? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for one more real quick?
I don't know.
I think we may. Do you have that?
No, I think we're out of time.
We're out of time then. Well, never mind. You know, it's very difficult here in Jupiter, Florida to... But yes, so that's the topic. I'm just saying, Michael, give meat a chance out there. And I think that's important.
Give me your chance.
He's Michael Kelly and I'm John Hancock. Next hour, talk a little more baseball. We'll be with all of you for the last hour here in Jupiter, Florida on Camo X.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.